and welcome to Expected Value, the podcast that goes inside the sports analytics world. I'm Paul Carr from True Media. This is episode 72 of the show. So for me, it's the Miami Dolphins perfect season episode. They went 17-0 back in 1972. My dad was born and raised in Miami. He had Dolphins season tickets since their first game. So 72 has always been tied to the Dolphins, in my mind, at least. This episode really has nothing to do with the Dolphins, everything to do with baseball. The season's just underway, so we're talking with former Orioles minor league hitting coach Tim Gibbons, who now works here at True Media as our baseball professional services lead. He handles our relationships with players, facilities, and agencies. Tim, or Gibby, as we affectionately call him, loves to talk hitting, so he and I will chat about his path to becoming a minor league hitting coach, what exactly he did in that role. I think it might be a little different than you expect, or at least I did. The data available to minor leaguers, working with a top-down approach throughout an organization, communicating data, super important in a lot of different ways for him, the rise in data usage by third parties like facilities, how agencies are using data, and how newer tracking data can help coaches. Then producer Blake Arney will join me to react and wrap things up. Without further ado, here's the Expected Value conversation with True Media's own Tim Gibbons. We're joined now on Expected Value by Tim Gibbons, the baseball professional services lead here at True Media, also a former hitting coach in the Orioles system. Tim, welcome to the show. Obviously, know you well, worked with you for about a year and a half. Let's start before you got to the Orioles. Just what was your background? You were not a major league player like a lot of hitting coaches. So generally speaking, what was your basic path to becoming a minor league hitting coach?
First off, Paul, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to being a guest on this podcast since I joined True Media about a year ago.
Big day.
But yeah, starting with background. So I obviously always loved baseball, played baseball in college, had a few stops at Farmingdale State University and St. John's University. And it was something that I knew I wanted my career to be in baseball. So the short, quick story version of it was after college, I moved down to Florida, figuring there was more opportunities, year-round baseball down there. Yep. So I worked at multiple different facilities, as well as started my own travel ball company called Line Drive Pro Baseball, where we coached kids from ages 8 all the way through high school. And then I would say the big stop that I guess kind of led me into the pro ball ecosystem was a place called the Data Cage in Jacksonville, Florida. I linked up with a guy named Mark Spencer, who was a former college golfer, big time golfer, and he got me involved in all the tech and batted ball systems with baseball. So traditionally I'd always done lessons, a lot of verbal cues, just video. When I got to the Data Cage in Jacksonville, we started using some batted ball systems like Rapsodo and TrackMan, FlightScope as well as bat sensors like Blast Motion, which track things like bat speed and attack angles and things of that nature. So adding more objectivity to the lessons, which in turn was what, when I got hired by the Orioles, they were looking for somebody who had a background in all this new technology. So that stop at the Data Cage in Jacksonville, I guess, kind of leapfrogged me into the world of which the baseball hitting ecosystem was heading, which was more objective feedback through technology and not just subjective verbiage of internal cues and how we're moving the body, but a lot more objectivity in what is happening in the swing. Let's actually identify it and not just guess.
And the hiring process has changed a lot in the last, we'll say 5 or 10 years, right? Where, you know, like I said, you didn't play in the majors, anything like that. You're coming more from a, you know, grassroots coaching background. That seems to have changed a lot from an outside perspective. Is that true? How they just changed and teams are a little more open-minded about who they might hire for positions like this?
I would have to agree. I would say 20 years ago, my path probably wouldn't have led me to getting a hitting coach job at in the professional ranks. But yes, I'm grateful in the time I came up that teams were more open-minded to guys that didn't necessarily play at the highest levels, but had worked with hitters at higher levels. The prerequisite of being a professional baseball player to becoming a hitting coach kind of isn't the same as it was 20 years ago. So I am lucky and fortunate for that because it allowed me to get where I got.
So give me a general sense. I mean, I'd like to think I know in general what a hitting coach does, maybe a little less so at the minor league level. Let's just start there. What does a typical minor league hitting coach do with one of those teams?
Sure. I would say the biggest thing we do now, and I'm speaking on my experience with the Orioles, but it was a lot about preparation, right? So I would say this might be an Orioles philosophy as much as it is, I don't know if it's league-wide like this, but we were less hands-on with the movement of players and trying to give mechanical cues. And it was more about trusting that we drafted the right guys and that we have guys in there that know what they're doing with their swing. So my main job on a daily basis was to prepare them for what they were going to see that night. So building reports of usage rates, having video aligned up. And yeah, I would say less internal cues about the swing itself and more preparation about what they were going to see that night.
Interesting.
So okay. And this is kind of an Orioles philosophy, and I'm kind of going a little further, but we were very much with the Orioles about we want to make practice as game-like as possible. So mm-hmm. like something that we did every day, we got rid of the tee, we got rid of front flips, and what we would do, we would try to replicate like the approach angles that they were going to see that night. So like the tee isn't preparing you for a 96-mile-per-hour sinker with 15 inches of horizontal movements.
Right.
So we did a lot of machine work and we did a lot of coach mixed pitch. So like your traditional batting practice from 20 years ago, standing 40 feet away and throwing 50-mile-per-hour fastballs down the middle wasn't really what we were about every day. It was this guy has a hoppy fastball, so let's get the machine dialed up. And he likes his slider a lot. So at least three of our five batting practice rounds, you're going to see that slider and not just feel good fastballs.
From a data standpoint, what sort of data do minor league teams have access to? We know at MLB level, there's StatCast and all this stuff. What does a typical, you know, AAA team, like where you were a year and a half ago, what do they have access to data-wise?
Pretty much everything at the AAA level. So I'm lucky that I jumped right into pro ball and I didn't start at the lower levels. I was hired in 2020 to be the AA hitting coach. Obviously, COVID happened, and then I ended up going to the next level of AAA. So I was fortunate that like my minor league grind started at the highest minor league level for the most part. So we had access to all the data that you would typically see at the big league level. And some of the key data points that we looked at and were interested in would be like the movement, induced vertical break, horizontal break. I don't want to just know what he's throwing. I want to know how each one of those moves. So it's less so like, oh, he's a 70% fastball guy to righties, and more his fastball has hop. It has 20 inches of induced vertical break. Here's a guy we need to push down. So I was fortunate that I had access to all the data you could possibly want in the minor leagues.
So you mentioned just now you're overseeing the approach in general. How much of a team's, we'll say a AAA team's approach, or at least in your case, is being dictated from, you know, on high by an MLB club? You know, I think of things like, you know, a couple years ago, the Astros minor league, every minor league team led MLB or minor league baseball in K rate from a pitching perspective. There was clearly something coming from on high about how to attack as an Astros pitcher. So how much comes from, we'll say on high, the MLB club versus that you're doing more at the AAA level and trying to individualize things?
From my experience with the Orioles, and very fortunate, we were a very tight-knit group from the major leagues all the way down to the DSL. So everything we did at the AAA level was a byproduct of what we were doing as an organizational as a whole, right? So our big three, we would always say with the hitters, was swing decisions, bat to ball, and exit velocity. Those were the three things that mattered most to us. And it didn't matter if you were at playing in high A or if you were the major league level. That was being instituted, and that was the message we were giving our hitters every day. So I feel like that was a good philosophy because it helped the players when they went from level to level. The messaging was very much the same. Mm-hmm. And I know not all teams can speak to that, but I thought that's where the Orioles did a really good job, is making the message universal up and down the organization. So hitters aren't hearing different philosophies from different hitting coaches as they go up the ranks. I would say we had an overall arching philosophy as how we were going to develop our hitters, and that remained consistent at every level throughout the minor leagues all the way up to the major leagues.
Yeah, and I guess that even goes to what you mentioned earlier about like drafting the right kinds of guys. And because I'm just thinking, if you get some 220 type of hitter who strikes out a ton and hits 40 home runs, that he might be a difficult guy to coach to the, you know, batted ball type of thing. So yeah, I guess that's important even more than in some cases, if you have that philosophy you're trying to institute everywhere.
It speaks to, I think, any good business, right? Like, we're drafting guys that we know are going to fit the way we are doing our player development. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a part of it. So there was we were a big swing decision guy. So we're not necessarily, I'm speaking on the Orioles' behalf, going to draft guys with high chase rates in college. Like, right. We want guys that are going to buy into what we do. So they did a really good job. And obviously, when you have a lot of good talent, it's easy to make philosophies work. But, yeah, they drafted extremely well. Got to coach guys like Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, who are super talented individuals. Okay. So, like, less about swing changes because their swings are already pretty good. Mm-hmm. Now let's just hammer in how detailed we can be in our preparation to put our hitters in the best position to be them and do their thing to have success.
So how do you communicate this data to them? You know, you have your general approaches. You talked about, you know, how you're going to attack a starting pitcher in a given night. How are you communicating that data to players and a whole bunch of different players who probably have different styles of communication?
Sure. The what, where, why would be it. And True Media was a big, big resource for me as a hitting coach. Like, the heat maps, I found in my experience, players gravitate toward the visuals of a heat map, right? Yeah. I don't just want to know, okay, verbally, like, he likes his fastball inside. You show a big heat map of a pitcher who's throwing his fastball and all of his pitch frequency is red up and in, very easy for that hitter to say, okay, there's clearly an area where he wants to attack me. So I said the what, the where, and the why. The what is the advanced movement stuff. I want to know how his fastball is playing. I want to know how it's moving. The where is the heat maps. And the why is things like usage. When he gets to two strikes, he wants to double up on his breaking ball, whatever it may be. But being able to answer those three questions using video, using True Media as a resource, using some of our own internal systems was my main goal, to leave that hitting meeting that I answered those three questions for our hitters. What, where, and why, I would say, would be a easy way to identify what we were trying to get across in our advanced hitter meetings.
How much of the kids, and I call them kids, most of them are, you know, early 20s-ish, how much are they coming in looking for this data now? I mean, this is stuff that didn't necessarily exist, you know, 5-10 years ago. How much do they come in expecting, wanting to see this data-based feedback and suggestions?
It's become a staple, and I would say each individual athlete's going to want to interpret the data differently. Like, so what I tried to do, speaking from my own experience again, like, I would set up a Google Drive. So here's the right-hand pitcher we're facing. There's going to be videos, there's going to be heat maps, there's going to be other visuals, and then just some raw data. I don't expect every hitter to look at everything that was in that file. But, you know, the guys who are lean more visually learners, they're going to gravitate to the heat maps. Some guys really just want to see the video to pick up on release point. So I think having all your I's dotted and T's crossed is very important, because the same message to one hitter, you might have to tweak to a different hitter for them to absorb that information to the best of their ability. So I think hitters now are expecting it. And I think you also have to give them options, that there's not just one way to get this information across, but giving like a buffet style, here's what we got on this pitcher, and allowing them to choose what they want to take away from it is highly important.
You mentioned that your approach was more data and preparation than, you know, tweaking a stance or a swing or something like that. Do you have an example though of how those two come together? You know, making something up, like some guy can't reach the outside pitch or is really struggling there, and, you know, then you as a coach can come in and say, well, you need to do this or something like that. You have an example of how just kind of that, I don't know, I'll call it the coaching side, the number side, really coalesce nicely into a good learning opportunity there?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. My immediate thought goes to Pete Rose, and how in Pete Rose had an interview where he spoke on how he didn't really like to mess with his swing, whether he was going good or bad. What he did was move in the box. I'm feeling a little late, like it's later in the season, bat speed slowed down a little bit. I'm going to give myself more space and move up. A guy who's really struggling chasing that slider down away, let's move him off the plate so it's not even an option that we're going to swing at that. So, yeah, there's obviously mechanical adjustments that you're going to make with hitters on the day-to-day, but I think just allowing them to understand exactly what is going on with them. So, like, one example we would use a lot is using True Media. Let's look at our swing rate heat map and let's look at our slug heat map. If those two aren't aligning, now it's less of a mechanical issue and more of an approach issue. My swing rate's really high at the top of the zone, but all my damage is in the bottom of the zone. That can be an easy fix now that I'm not going to change the swing. I'm going to say, let's now start working on pushing the ball down a little bit because that's where you have success. So I would say in my years with the Orioles, there was a lot more teaching of that, like just self-awareness for hitters. You'd be amazed when they look at a heat map or they look at some data on themselves that, oh, I do that? I didn't even realize I do that. Once you put it out there and give them some enlightenment to where they're struggling or what they're doing really well, I think it's easy then to communicate what adjustments you guys both need to make collectively to get the most out of each individual hitter.
And just kind of purely from a communication standpoint, how do you get those things across to them in, I guess, I'll just say good ways or ways that they accept and realize this is a good idea? Because these are, you know, these are high achievers. These guys have been the best at pretty much every level they've probably played for most of their lives. And here, you know, you and coaches are coming in to tweak things. How do you kind of get that those points across in a nice and an accessible sort of way?
That's a great question. And I would say we would probably both agree communication's number one thing. So for me, I think it was always about focusing on the positives, not the negatives. Not, oh, we're really struggling hitting the breaking ball down and away. You could take that same message, but now word it like we're dominating the fastball in the inner part of the plate. How can we extend out our slug a little more away? So I think when you focus on the positives, athletes, people in general, don't want to just hear things they're doing bad. And I feel like even I grew up with coaches that wanted to focus on the negative. You're not doing X, Y, or Z. I think when you change that message and start with the positive, here's what you do really well. That helps the communication with the athlete, helps build some trust that I'm not just trying to pick the hitters apart. That's not my job. My job is to get the most out of the hitters. And I feel like when you focus on the more positive aspects of what they do really well, that's when you kind of open up the communication a little bit easier to connect with somebody when you're not just hammering all the negatives that they do.
We talked about the rise of, I'll call them, third-party facilities over the past 10, 15 years, not just at, you know, the youth levels, but all the way up to where, you know, major leaguers using places like Driveline and Tread and these kinds of places. As a coach, there's been kind of on both sides of this thing. How have you seen all of that landscape change over the last decade or so?
I'll start with this. When I was first coaching in pro ball, I was amazed at how active some of these agents and private coaches were with their players on a day-to-day basis. It took me by surprise when I would be in the cage with a hitter and he would say, oh, my agent thinks I need to get my hands higher or whatever. So my first impression was like, wow, these guys are really more involved than I realized on a day-to-day. And now kind of on the other side of it, I think everyone just wants the best for their athletes or their clients. So I think it comes with good-natured intentions, but I think you have to be very careful because a lot of these athletes are hearing a lot of different messages from different people. So being able to pick and choose what's important to you and who you're listening to kind of deflect some of the outside noise that's unnecessary is important. But I would say that was my biggest takeaway is that some agents, facilities are a lot more involved with their clients day-to-day remotely than I would have guessed heading into pro ball.
As a coach, how do you handle that? They're hearing different things from different places. You know, obviously the org is the one that is paying them, but they also have to own their own career and the data's, you know, could be different or at least different perspectives. How do you handle that from the inside as a coach who's trying to balance all these different things?
It's not easy for sure. And I remember being taken back like, well, you're in the cage with me and I'm the hitting coach like type of mindset, which was the wrong mindset to have. Like, I think you have to put the athlete first. And I think just, I think opening up the communication, well, what are you working on? Asking questions. Why do we think your hands need to be higher? I think everything just comes back to communication. I don't think you should have a the mindset of like, I'm the end all be all as a hitting coach. Like these guys have been with different coaches throughout their whole career. You're just one stop on their journey, right? So I think respecting that there's other outside voices, recognizing it, and then just keeping the line of communication as transparent as possible allows you to kind of navigate that minefield of like, how am I dealing with all these different voices in my athlete's head?
This will sound a little reductive, and I sort of know the answer to this, but from the outside, why would a player need these outside sources, people telling him things? It seems like maybe that's something a team could or should take care of. I know it's not that simple, but that's just kind of a from a broad perspective. Why would someone go to these different sources than the team for which he's playing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And obviously, working for a team, we knew this, and we just tried to be as open as possible and send guys off, especially in the off season, right? Like in the off season, you're not with the org. Like you're back home with your family. You're going to your private facility, or you're going to your private strength coach, or whatever it may be. I think just having an open communication, what are you working on, and just being involved on a day-to-day basis with them is the key to navigating it all. I've said it now, and maybe I've been repetitive with it. Keeping open line of communication is everything, because even if they are going to a different hitting coach that has a different philosophy, as long as you know what they're working on and you're staying engaged and getting video from them and all, like, I think accepting it for what it is, that it's not going to go away, and players have dealt with other coaches their whole lives, I think accepting it and just keeping the communication open is the key to navigating it. But I totally understand. We had that conversation internally, like, all right, we just had a full season, 8 months with these guys, and now for the next 4 months, we're not really sure what they're going to be doing or who they're working with. I think just having the conversations and being as transparent as possible is the key to navigating it.
So kind of on that same vein, you're now our baseball professional services lead. Part of that is you're interacting directly with players, MLB players who, you know, contract directly with True Media. What are those interactions like? You know, you don't have to name names or drop secrets or anything, but what are those interactions like? What are they looking for? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the heat maps again. I think for our product specifically, the graphics, especially the heat maps, are what players are seeking the most. And I think it's just a case that all teams have this information, and how much they want to expose to their players varies drastically depending which organization you're dealing with. So I'm a big player advocate. We're judging these guys as an organization on X, Y, and Z. They should be able to follow along and be able to speak the language of the data so they have a better understanding of it. So yeah, I think it's just guys have made it this far at the professional level. Any type of advantage they can get from the data, they're going to want to jump on. So just exposing them to some more information about themselves, about opponents they may be facing, and then just organizing it differently for how they want to receive the information. But heat maps are the big one. And just being able to understand yourself a little bit better goes a long way for these guys who have already made it to the highest levels. I think now with a better understanding of data and being able to pinpoint things that their opponents are seeing about themselves, I think opens up a lot of avenues for them to have growth in their own careers.
How are you oversee our agency's relationship as well on the baseball side? How are agencies using data for clients, potential clients, whatever? How are the agencies using the data that we provide them?
It's definitely mixed. I would say, again, to my surprise, a lot are player development driven. I want to send reports to my guys for the opposing pitcher they're going to see. And a lot of it, I think, is scouting at the amateur level. They want to find the next big clients at the college ranks or wherever it may be. So I would say a mix of scouting and a mix of player development, which, like I said, the player development piece, agencies are a little more involved than I would have thought. Obviously, facilities even more so, because those are the same trainers they were with in-house for 4 or 5 months in the offseason. So being able to track progress and being able to make sure that these guys are still attacking some of the goals that you had set for them in their offseason plans. So, yeah, and I think also like a big part of it too is being able to compare and contrast players, right? So like for contract negotiations, like say I have a second baseman who's in a contract year, like I want to see other second basemen in the last 10 years who are similar to my players, and what can we get for them? So I would say it's a wide net of how they're using data, but yeah, I would say those three is probably the big three there.
Yeah, I think the most interesting, or maybe just part I'm not familiar with on the agency side, is kind of the recruitment thing, because you get it from a team perspective. I hadn't really thought about it from an agency perspective, where it's, oh, this guy has, you know, making it up, these good underlying swing decision numbers, but his, you know, he had bad BABIP or whatever this season. Maybe we can grab him and he's undervalued and help him either develop, or just, you know, we know we're buying low essentially. That's a pretty interesting use case, I think, for the agency side.
Yeah. And I think what I've seen agencies specifically, they like to find the anomaly, right? Like I want to find that lefty whose release point is different than everyone else's, because now that has some value in the sense that there's nobody else like that. So I think agencies I've seen use data and platforms like True Media to be able to find those anomalies and pick guys, like you said, who might have been unlucky their senior year of college, but the underlying exit velocity looks really good. Looks like that could be a pro guy. Yeah, I would say that it kind of the net kind of covers all different areas of how they're using data.
What kind of new stuff is interesting to you? Now, obviously, StatCast is continues to grow at the MLB level, and a lot of that trickles down to minor leagues as well. But new data points you've seen in the last year or two that are pretty interesting to you moving forward?
The MLB outfitting Hawkeye when AAA and the major leagues has opened up new data sources for bat tracking, which to me is the most interesting, because you're getting Hawkeye's able to decipher things like bat speed, attack angles, vertical bat angles, and things where video might not necessarily tell you the whole story. Being able to see objective numbers about how the bat is moving in space, I think, is the next frontier of data and how guys are going to start looking in. Not just now the what of, oh, I do really well slugging on the inner third. I do really well slugging on the inner third because my bat stays vertical through the zone instead of flat. Like, we're now being able to objectively see numbers that are tracking how the bat's moving in space. And I find that extremely interesting and very valuable in terms of personal player development and opponent scouting as well.
So you take that, add it to all your other information, and you have, I guess it goes to more of the why of what you were talking about earlier of why is it this way? Why is it that way? And then you, and that's when you go to the player then as a coach and you're like, all right, let's talk through this.
If I can give you an aside to use that same example about bat tracking, I know Paul is a big Royals fan. Vinny P has been struggling a little bit.
Yep.
So on True Media, just the other day, I looked at vertical bat angle of Vinny P compared to Freddie Freeman. Mm-hmm. And you saw, obviously, that's a tough comp when you're comparing somebody to Freddie Freeman. But the objective data about how their bat's moving in space tells me that Vinny P is coming flat and across the zone, hitting a lot of ground balls and or clipping balls to the opposite field, whereas Freeman stays much more vertically, giving him way more room for error. So even his miss hits are going to produce batted balls that have value in terms of creating slug and extra base hits. So like something like that. And so it allowed me, I noticed Vinny P's been struggling a little bit. Let me dive deeper. Oh, his swing is really flat right now. He could benefit from getting a little more vertical through the zone to optimize his miss hits and how his barrel's moving for space. That's a quick hitter example of being able, we know he's struggling, but now we can go a level deeper of why by looking at how his bat is moving.
So then as a coach, you, I guess it depends a lot on the player and coach relationship, but you could either like just give him the information and let him make the adjustments, or you could make a suggestion like, hey, if you, I don't even know what the right thing is, drop your elbow or whatever it is, you could give him a physical adjustment. It just kind of depends on the relationship there.
Back to the communication relationship. Some guys will want, like, what is my vertical bat angle on fastballs? Other guys will want, hey, we got to get a little more, like, think a little more uphill through the zone, whatever it may be. That's knowing your athletes and being able to decipher the information for them to best receive it. But you'll find guys that some guys want a verbal cue, like, push them down. Some guys want to know he has 21 inches on average of his fastball, which is two very different ways to kind of get the same message across. I think it goes back to knowing your athletes and how best to give them the information that will help lead them to success.
Nice. I'm going to call Vinny and tell him to get things straightened out here. Royals can get things going, try to make a playoff push.
Just straightened out or more vertical, we should call it.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. All right, let's wrap things up. Their playing favorites segment where we get through a number of your favorites to get to know you a little bit. What's your favorite number and why?
Number 24. And I believe your next question is going to be my favorite baseball player growing up.
He's tied together often. Okay.
So my number 24, who's my favorite player growing up?
It's got to be Griffey, right?
Got to be Griffey. Yes, sir. So yeah, 24 was the number I wore every sport I could, whether it be baseball, basketball, football. 24 has been my number my whole life, and it was inspired by Ken Griffey Jr., sweetest lefty swing of all time.
I was going to say, were you a sweet swinging lefty also? Or
no, I was not, actually. But quick aside, I got to throw him batting practice in Orlando at one of the facilities I worked with. I coached one of his nephews, so... That was cool. One of the coolest moments of my life, being able to throw batting practice to Ken Griffey Jr. And he had his hat on backwards throughout the BP session. So that was super cool.
Expect nothing less. All right. I know you're this comes from traveling to a few different places. But give me your favorite breakfast sandwich. And I want both the composition of it. And if there's a specific place you would go in a perfect world, what would that be?
Bacon, egg and cheese, salt, pepper, ketchup from a Long Island deli on a seated roll. Would be the number one. I know some people say a bagel. I love me some bagels being from New York, but for a breakfast sandwich specifically, I would rather it on a seeded roll. So bacon, egg, cheese, salt, pepper, ketchup. That's the order.
That's it. I feel like you've made that order a couple times. Yeah,
I have. Yes.
All right. I know you love coaching your son baseball. Favorite thing about coaching him or trying to get him to do or whatever it might be?
Just the time spent with him as a minor league hitting coach. Even you're on the road a ton, even when you're home, going to the ballpark by 11 a.m. I'm not home till 1 a.m. So more than anything else, it's the memories. I'm a very hands-off coach when it comes to him. He's only five, about to turn six. So this is now the third season I've been able to coach him, and there's really no cues whatsoever. The only cues I give him are eyes on the ball and swing fast. That's literally it. I'm not going to worry about mechanics or anything up until he's in his teenage years at least. Yeah. I want him to develop a love for the game and learn how to rotate fast because, in my opinion, that's the foundational piece of good baseball players, whether you want to throw hard or hit the ball hard and drive it with authority. It's the ability to rotate fast. So that's the main message.
Yep. Keep it simple when they're young, for sure. Finally, you maybe answered this already with the Griffey thing, but your favorite how did I get here moment, you know, just something, a cool place your career has brought you.
Griffey one was cool. With Norfolk in 21 and 22, I got to coach against Ronald Acuna, who had, you could tell right away that he was at a different level than anyone else, and it wasn't his swings or anything. There was a ball hit down the right field line, and he picked it up and threw an absolute rocket to second base that was unlike anything I had ever seen on a baseball field. That it took one throw to notice, like, he doesn't quite belong here. He's at a little different level than anyone else. And then Yadier Molina in Memphis got to play against him while he was rehabbing in 22. Being able to sit in a dugout where I'm preparing to face a pitcher whose battery mate is Yadier Molina calling pitches against you is a pretty cool moment, saying, whoa, this is a pretty high level that we've made it to in our baseball journey, being able to game plan against Yadier Molina.
Nice. Good story to end with. All right. Tim Gibbons, our baseball professional services lead here at True Media, former hitting coach in the Orioles minor league system. Thanks for joining us here on Expected Value. Back in the True Media studios, I'm Paul Carr. Thanks again to Tim Gibbons for joining us on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at LineDrivePro. Hit him up if you're a baseball player, facility, agency who's interested in our product, or if you just want to talk hitting. He loves to do that too. Joined now by producer Blake Arney. And Blake, I want to spin this a little differently here. So your day job, if you will, is working with Sporting KC as their radio broadcaster. So you're around the team a lot. So I'm curious about comparisons between, you know, what Gibby talked about as far as presenting data to players and as part of prep and game plans, things like that. On the baseball side, soccer's obviously behind baseball like everyone is in on the data front. But what do you see as far as Sporting or just in general in the soccer world going as far as how they present data and prep and that sort of thing on the soccer side?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, you talked about how he wasn't necessarily as involved with the, day-to-day mechanics with each player, you know, showing them what to do. You definitely see that on the soccer side, you know, with Sporting KC. When I'm at training, you know, a lot of days I'll see, you know, Carey Zavagnin or Peter Vermees, a couple of the coaches at Sporting KC, talking to a player. You know, they pull them aside and they give them some instruction. But at the same time, they have a whole staff, as most teams in soccer and most teams in sports do these days, because you have to compete, that look just at analytics. And they're talking, you know, each day with the coaching staff, trying to figure out what things they can do against each team to gain an advantage, to figure out. I kind of think of it, analytics in terms of looking at matchups, as a bit of a fast track to figuring out what teams do well, because of course you can analyze players and you can figure out what they do well by watching it. And there's a lot of value to that, but by getting the analytics first, it kind of gives you that idea of what things might each player do well. And I think a lot of teams use that to figure that out quickly.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's even more pronounced on the baseball side, just because there's so many games. You know, MLB teams are playing 162 games every single day. You know, soccer, the NFL, even more so. You have a week, you can almost just watch all the stuff you want to watch, you know, depending exactly on the approach. You obviously cannot do that with baseball. You can't watch the guy's last five starts or whatever every single day. It's definitely a good shortcut, or at least get you the information faster. It's really just about efficiency as much as anything. And kind of what you said, I thought it was interesting that Gibby specifically wasn't super into the mechanics side of things. So not into it, but just wasn't asked to do that. Is, you know, that's not what the role was, which, again, for me, you think hitting coach, you think it's someone who's like in there on the other batter's box, like looking at your swing and saying, you got to, whatever it is, get your elbow up higher and drive forward more and rotate the hips and stuff like that. And there's obviously an element of that, but it was interesting that the Orioles seemed to get the right players, kind of forge them in the lower levels of the minors. And by the time they get up to the upper levels in AAA and such, it's more about approach. It's about teaching that mental side of things as much as the physical side. And from a data perspective, like that just opens up all kinds of things. Because once you kind of get the physical tools in place and it's about approach and things like that, that's where the data just shines. So that was super interesting to me. All right. Thanks, Blake. If you like this conversation with Tim Gibbons, there's lots of other baseball episodes in our archives, including earlier this year with Bobby Bandalo. He's the coordinator of advanced scouting for the world champion Texas Rangers. As always, we appreciate any ratings and reviews you can do wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, Spotify, anywhere else, and any sharing you can do across social media or anywhere else. All that helps us continue to grow. On behalf of producer Blake Arney and Tim Gibbons and all of us here at True Media, I'm Paul Carr. Thank you for listening to Expected Value, the podcast that goes inside the sports analytics world.